Welcome to Radio Shalom. We are playing at 87.6 megahertz on the FM, and also simultaneously we play from our webpage, which is www.radioshalom.dk. In the studio today, we are two hosts. This is Yael Fahy Gravesen and myself, Alexander Mikhtaslav. And we have a very interesting guest with us today. Her name is Maggie Perrin. She is a German movie director with whom we will have a conversation about her latest film made about a true story of a Jewish-German survivor from Berlin. And to begin with, I will just read you a little, or rather give you a little info about Maggie Perrin, who she is. So, Maggie Perrin is a German screenwriter and director. She was born in 1974 in Frankfurt am Main, Germany. Perrin studied film directing at the University of Television and Film in Munich. She has since written and directed several films and TV shows. Her most notable works include the feature films Stellungswechsel from 2007, Schwerkraft from 2009, and Die Mitte der Welt from 2016, as well as TV series Berlin Station and Papa Anne from 2020. Perrin has won numerous awards for her work, including the Bavarian Film Award for Best Screenplay for Schwerkraft in 2009 and the Grimme Preis für Papa Anne in 2021. In addition to her work as a screenwriter and director, Maggie Perrin has also worked as a lecturer and mentor in film and television. She has taught at the Film Academy Baden-Württemberg and the University of Television and Film Munich, and has been a mentor for the Berlinale Talents Program. Perrin is known for exploring complex themes and characters in her work and for her distinctive visual style. Her films often focus on personal relationships and human experience, and she has been praised for her ability to create deeply emotional and intimate stories. Outside of her film work, Perrin is also an advocate for gender equality in the film industry. She has spoken out about the lack of opportunities for women in the industry, has been involved in initiatives to promote gender diversity and inclusion. Overall, Maggie Perrin is a highly respected and talented filmmaker, known for her unique voice and ability to tell powerful stories that resonate with audiences. Maggie Perrin's latest film is called The Forger. And The Forger is about the young Jew, Sioma Schenhaus, who with his Aryan appearance and exceptional graphic skills succeeded in fabricating fake passports and identity papers for Berlin's Jews, while many of the city's Jews were forced to flee before being deported, as was the case with his own parents and a grandmother. The young Sioma remains in Berlin, where he continues his illegal act in an attempt to save as many as possible. The film is based on the true story of Samson Schenhaus, better known as Sioma, who grew up in Berlin Mitte. Thank you. The soundtrack of the film is composed by Mario Grigorov, who with many different short themes succeeded very well in creating and upholding the changing moods of different scenes of the film. What we just heard was the title theme, The Forger, but we will hear more tracks from the film during the program. Okay, welcome to Radio Shalom, Maggie. We are very happy to have you here, Yael and me, who are in the studio right now. We've been at the screening of your film, of your Pass for Falskern, as it is called in Danish. And we can warmly recommend it to everybody to go and see it, even though it's only, as far as I can see, it's only one day left that people can go and see this film. It's on Wednesday.
Yeah, at Grand
Theatre? Yes, it is on Grand Theatre at 1640 of all times.
Okay.
So it is last chance if anybody wants to see the film, and it's really very worth seeing. And Maggie, just we would like you to introduce yourself just shortly to our listeners, okay?
Okay, thanks for Radio
Shalom.
Shalom for having me. It's really, really nice down here. I love it. Actually, the movie is distributed in Denmark, so it will open in cinemas on the 11th of May.
Okay.
All right. This was not the last chance.
No, there is another chance. Maybe okay. The weather is great, but then you can always go late to the movies. But introducing myself, well, I actually started as a writer, and I wrote mostly comedies and two thrillers. I'm not really a thriller person. And and then I started directing when I was 30 years old, and now I'm 48, so I'm directing a little bit now.
So you have reached a lot already.
And I got Sjoma's novel in 2007, and I made the movie in 2021.
All right.
So it is a long time.
what make you make the movie about Sjoma? What was the motive?
I made a movie in the 40s called Napola in 2003. It was done. I just only wrote it. And when I got the book, my first thought was, I don't want to make a film again in the 1940s. And then I read this book and I laughed so much. Sjoma has this really nice sense of humor. And I had the feeling I could literally walk around in Berlin. And I told the producers that I really want to do it. And then it got translated in English. And I got this really nice review in the New York Times.
Okay.
And then Hollywood wanted to make it. And it didn't turn out. Didn't work out. And I always called the producer like year after year and said, listen, this book is still in my head and I'm still thinking about it. And then one day I was complaining that they never called me back. And a friend of mine said, well, so why don't you call Sjoma Schönhaus? So I got his number from the Auslandsauskunft, and he was on the phone. And I was like,
Yeah.
And I said, listen, you don't know me, but my
name
is...
You're already a fan.
Yeah, but I'm Maggie Perrin, and I read your book like years ago, and it's still in my head. And can I visit you? And he said, yeah, sure, Maggie, come by. You sound nice. And I went to Basel and met him. So.
You really met a great character, actually. We had impressing opinion about him, right?
Yes, definitely. Definitely the main character. But before we go to the main character, I would like you to fill us in more about the situation of the German Jews in Berlin during the war. Because this is a story that we do not know much about. I was trying to study a little bit now. But I think that the information that I got from ChatGPT is not very secure. It's not very sure that they give me some answers about the Berlin ghetto that was incorporating, you know, the history of the Warsaw ghetto. And I became very cautious with
that. I think ChatGPT is still a child, so it's still working. So one thing is, I'm not so good with numbers, actually. But Berlin had 1 million citizens. At the beginning, when the deportation starts, you got a letter where you had to go. And when you were working in a weapon industry or war relevant industry, you could tell them that you are working for this industry, and they told you can stay.
So this was what was called the Freihaltung.
Freistellung.
Freistellung.
Which mean what?
That you are working and they can't, that you're not allowed to go to the east.
Especially, okay.
Sioma always said, they said being sent to the east, like saying being deported, was when the whole world knew about the Holocaust. Mm. And for Sioma, it was really important that his character had the mindset of a 20-year-old actually living then, and not the mindset of a 55-year-old writer who like knows a lot of things about the Holocaust. So you could stay in Berlin. In case of Sioma, when his parents got deported, someone comes in and says, okay, you are only one person, so this is your room. The other four rooms belong to the Deutsche Volk now.
Okay.
All the belongings in there. Because when they crossed the border, all the belongings belonged to the German folk, which actually didn't happen like this, because then the big Nazis came in and got like the carpet and all these things. That's the craziest stories. Mm-hmm. I think in 20 years, when there could be a possible comedy about it, how greedy they have been. You can't imagine the greediness when
the film. I mean, in principle, the state confiscated it, but everybody was stealing around.
Everyone was stealing. So this was, and the crazy thing is, for example, because there were a lot of people committing suicide, not really in 1942 when our film takes place, but later. And because they had the law that all these belongings belongs to the German folk, if a family committed suicide, they had to give it to a Jewish family. They were signing the papers, then this family was deported. And then, you know, this was so crazy. There was like, they actually believed that the things they were doing were right. Mm. Can you imagine this? Yes.
Not really. it's crazy.
It is such a crazy mindset. They had a law for everything and they were trying to stick to the law. Mm. And then they believed they're doing the right thing.
Yes. Mm. That's actually what's terrifying here.
It is very terrifying.
Yeah, that it's possible.
So, and then especially young people decided to go underground.
Yeah.
This is what Sioma does, but that Kasra did, and Gerda did as well. So they were trying to find people they could stay with, share their Lebensmittelmarken.
Yeah.
And Sioma always told me he would never have made it without the Lebensmittelmarken. This is that you get these stamps, traveling stamps he got from Franz Kaufmann, because you just couldn't get food. You just couldn't.
Yes.
It was impossible.
Yeah. I don't remember the name of the girl of his lover. What was his name?
Gerda,
yes. Her name was Gerda. She was always fighting all the time to get those.
Yeah, and she had to prostitute herself.
Yes.
And also dead. I mean, he was sleeping with the Mrs. Peters.
Yes.
So they were like, prostitution was like, Sioma said, if he had not been faking passports, he would have ended up prostituting himself as well.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes.
Mrs. Peter was Jews too?
The woman in
woman.
She is Catholic.
Yeah.
She was really she really believed in God. She went to church every weekend, and were trying to be nice, though she has been completely anti-Semitish. Anti-Semitish in English is
anti-Semitic.
Yeah. She was very rough. I mean,
completely. This double bindness. I really spoke with Sioma a lot about people who were thinking they were good, or were thinking they were doing the right thing. And from our perspective now, we're like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
But there was a rule for everything. So if you were sticking to the rules, you were doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. But it's also about surviving.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that each of them find their own way how they think or believe they can survive by that kind of behavior. That was probably hers, I assume. I don't know. She was so rough that it feels like she never wanted like to get out of this role, just to keep going.
Yeah.
You know?
She was like someone who's on the cycle. The moment you stop pedaling,
exactly,
you fall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's how I experienced her. So. Yeah.
I wasn't sure about her. It was not quite clear in the film for me whether she was Jewish or not.
No.
But you're saying that she was not Jewish.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Right. How about there was other issues also,
still,
I think.
Maybe you should just explain what the film is about, because we are sitting that. And talking about a film, but sort of in general terms, because maybe you tell us.
But Sioma, he is a son from Russian parents. Like he spoke Russian with his parents and Yiddish with his grandmother Alte. And he was he went to art school. And then his parents had to go to the East. They were deported in June 1942, and Sioma was left behind. He was only 21 years old. Sioma had a chance, because he was such a good artist, to fake passports. And the passports were actually donated in the Opferstock. Was ist denn Opferstock? Opferstock is where you put your money in when you go to church, and Catholic or church.
Oh, okay.
So, donate their passports in the Bekennende Kirche in Dahlem. And then the passports were brought to Franz Kaufmann. And then Sioma changed the photography in it. And he got food for his work. Yeah. So, and my movie is about this young man trying to survive and trying to stay alive, really. This was one of his things. He said, if in order for my way of staying alive keeps me from getting deported, or that the police finds out who I am. So he was really a bit in denial. It's also a story about denial, actually, until it's getting so hard that he had to leave the country. So it's really about someone who loves Germany a lot and loves his hometown, Berlin, and he had blonde hair. He looked the way non-Jewish people would have liked to look. I mean, most Germans
at that time especially.
don't look the way. But it is a survival story of a really, really young man. Really bold young man, yeah.
Yes, but it's also a story of him wanting to enjoy life.
Yes.
Which is very noticeable in the film, that he's not taking life seriously very much. He's not afraid that he will be caught. He somehow, he even endangers himself in certain situations. I mean, he's not closing the door when he's sitting and forging the passes. And the two boys, they go out and they pretend they are Navy officers, for example. And this is obviously, I mean, very critical situation if anybody would try to stop them and check them in. But they still do it. They want to enjoy life. Some people say that Sioma is, on the one hand, he's forging passports. On the other hand, he is forging his life. How would you react to this type of interpretation?
It is true. I mean, I talked with him about the title of his book. It was called The Passfälscher. And I said, do you want to keep the title? He said, yes. For me, the title is, because fälschen is not something very positive. You know, you forge something. Sioma said you can smell anxiety. He could say when you start getting, you can smell fear. He said you can smell fear, and he wanted to be fearless. And I understand this. When I see, I don't know. I mean, I can complete. It was his survival strategy, and he did survive. Yeah,
I think it was very interesting for me. What struck me most, actually, that in the process of doing it, and the first time he actually got that he's been told that he's actually an artist. That struck me, because it feels like for me when I see him how we do this and how we actually neglect the reality there around him, and the danger of it. It's like that he's so occupied of the fact that he is actually an artist. What was most important for him. I mean, he just like was like, I felt like he's in a box where he's just happy enough and just to know that he's an artist, that he's doing this false pass, but it's an art. And he was very proud of it.
Yeah, I mean, in psychology, you call it reframing. If something really bad happens, traumatizing happens, and actually Sioma was deeply traumatized. Yeah. When he was old, he was crying all the time. And I think everything that he neglected came out really strongly. But he reframed everything. Yeah. Even when he was old, he could reframe things, and all of a sudden they were less painful.
Yeah.
Which I think actually is a nice way to go through life. Because if you look at Sioma, okay, he forged his way. He went with a uniform to go dancing, but he didn't harm anyone.
No.
Quite the contrary. I mean, he helped about 200 people to survive with the passports. And Franz Kaufmann, for Franz Kaufmann, it was hard to work with Sioma because he was such a Schwierkopf. Schwierkopf is someone who's all over the place. Mm. But I think he grew up and they really became friends at the end.
Okay.
And when Sioma was talking about Franz Kaufmann, he was always crying because he really became a father figure for him. Yeah, but reframing is Sioma's way of coping with the pain.
But still, everybody around him died.
Actually. Mm-hmm.
Everybody around Sioma died, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Sioma said he didn't know that they were dying. It was 1942, but you're going to meet a friend and all of a sudden the apartment is empty. And there is these gaps. He talked a lot about these gaps. You know, he was still thinking that one day his parents were knocking and they were standing in front of the door. And I think probably this is something I wanted to make as a filmmaker. See, Dad is there sitting on the chair. He comes in the restaurant. The next moment, he's gone.
Okay.
So together is there. The next moment, the relationship ends because it's too dangerous. So there's something nice there. The next moment, it's gone. Like you come to this huge apartment, everything is gone. So like these, because now that we look at the Holocaust, we see I can't really talk about it without crying, but Sioma was really important for him to show the film out of his perspective. So that is there and then he's gone. And Louis Hofmann and I, we were trying to show this sadness about this, you know, like I'm in my apartment and my parents are not there and there's nothing left and I have to burn my drawings in order to have warm hands for 2 minutes, something like this. And this is actually the reason I got the job. There were like other directors and even Hollywood directors who wanted to make it and wanted to make it a lot bigger, more like The Pianist, you know, this lovely film.
Yes.
But The Pianist takes place in the Warsaw ghetto, you know, and the Warsaw ghetto was the Warsaw ghetto, right? And Sioma left Germany in summer 43. And for Sioma, it was really important that I don't change anything. It was really important for him. So I said, okay, so then we make a movie about these gaps. All the friend is there. All of a sudden, he's gone. Your parents have been there. Now they're only there in the picture. This is quite unusual, actually. We made, I think Sioma and I decided to make a quite unusual film. Because it's quite silence, and I don't have much music in it. Maybe you heard about it. There's a lot of silence, and he had to cope with the silence. So, but this is something I promised to him, and I mean, Sioma is a Holocaust survivor, and I decided as a director, I respect his will for the story and what the story tells. So because, I mean, I can direct a lot of films, I can invent stories, I'm quite a good original story writer, but this is not an original story. It's about a person who really lived. I said, okay, I promise you, this is what I'm going to do. So this is what I did.
All right.
Amazing.
Thank you.
You know his friend?
I mean, his friend at Caswell, he died.
Yeah.
Yeah, he died. He also has a story. Actually, all the characters, whenever your audience comes to Berlin, all the characters in our movie have a Stolperstein.
Okay. Have a what?
A Stolperstein. A Stolperstein.
Yes,
genau.
Yes.
Dad has one, Franz Kaufmann has one, Ludwig Litzwes and Sjoma Schönaas has one, actually because of our movie.
All right.
I was very touched, particularly in this scene where he'd been caught in the restaurant. It's almost in the end of the movie, and then he had to go. I mean, it took him, and the way he has to say goodbye, that just binding his shoes.
His lenses, yeah.
No, his shoes. Yeah. That was really touching because they didn't even look at each other.
Yeah, I think if you sit in the movie and really, I don't know how to say, hingeben, if you let the movie like really suck in, you understand how it must have been for Sjoma. You know, being so cheerful and being so loving life so much and then leaving the town you love the most. I mean, there's this big love from Sjoma to Berlin. I mean, if people fall in love with Berlin, it's a life-longing love.
Okay.
I know a lot of Israelis who really deeply fall in love with Berlin at the moment, which I can understand. And Sjoma was completely in love with his hometown.
Yeah, I understand that.
So the film is a non-fiction story, actually. As you say, Sjoma didn't want you to change any facts, anything that was happening in the film. And were you allowed to paint the figures of your own?
Well, I mean, I had to zusammenfassen, I had to summarize it a bit.
Yes.
If not, it would have been a series, right? So I summarized the ending a bit. He was like faking the military passport. Later, there were a lot of crazy things happening in between. So I had to summarize this a little bit. And I had to do it after Sjoma died because I just could have never made the movie. It would have been a series. And what I devoted it to Sjoma. You know this fairy tale about the girl with the stars falling from the sky?
Mm-hmm.
And then she looks at the stars and there's a big Jew on it.
Mm.
And I wrote this the week after Sjoma died. So for me as a filmmaker, this is my... memorial for him, because for Sjoma being stigmatized was actually horrible. Sjoma came from a family that they were Jewish, but they were not really like practicing.
Yeah.
And for Sjoma wearing this big yellow star was horrible. It was really horrible for him.
Yeah.
So I dedicated this to Sjoma. It wasn't in the movie before he died.
Okay.
In the screenplay.
Yeah, well, he was alone. I mean, he was really alone.
He was completely alone.
That's really, in itself, very, very sad. I mean, amazing sad. And you can feel it in the movie. You can feel it very strongly.
A lot of people ask me, so if you're not allowed to change it or fictionalize it or make it bigger or put more Nazis in the movie, why did you want to make it? And for me, I wanted to make it because there is this huge amount of anti-Semitism that is so silent that you can't really put your finger on. And it happens a lot in Germany. Really, it happens a lot. And if you like say, well, this was a bit weird, was it? What was so weird? For example, there's this Jewish family that commits suicide. And Miss Peters wants Sjoma to take them away. And she says, it's only fair that your kind takes your kind away, which is horrible. I think it's a horrible sentence.
Mm.
And when we rehearsed it, you could see the whole crew like feeling like... But then we did the scene again and again and again and again, and all of a sudden you got used to the sentence. You also got used to that everyone was saying Heil Hitler all the time. The first two shooting days was like, Heil Hitler. And I could... but for Sjoma it was important that there is not such thing that a good German saying Grüß Gott... And the bad German saying Heil Hitler, he said everyone said it, even himself. So what we realized during the shooting, you get used to all kind of bad things, right?
Yeah, you just accept that it's that's how it is. It sounds like that, finished, without feeling anything. I mean, it's just it must be terrible to shoot this movie.
I thought about Sjoma a lot because he said we humans we get used to a lot of things very fast. And I realized with us, with the team, all of a sudden, there was Hitler everywhere. Mm. That was also important for Sioma. Like, for example, in the cafe, you see this huge picture of Adolf Hitler. And he said, it was like this. There were like women cooking, and they had all these postcards from Adolf Hitler in the kitchen. Like when they were like cooking potatoes, they were looking at their favorite postcards. He was a superstar. Yeah.
It is crazy.
It is super crazy.
The movie was played in Germany, I assume, right? In Berlin?
In the Berlin Film Festival.
When was it?
In last year at the Berlin Film Festival.
What kind of reaction did you get for the movie from the media, from the people?
Actually, the big newspapers really, really like it. Like the really big newspapers. I don't read reviews anyway, because as a filmmaker, I mean, you have very, very good friends and they tell you what you did. For example, the first 10 minutes, like you said before, I had to take scenes out, and it's a bit, it's not the best 10 minutes I shot in my career as a director. So I have to learn from that and make it better next time, right? But the reviews were really good in the big papers, but there was... For example, one review said the real Sioma Schönhaus had darker hair and looked slightly sick.
Okay.
So a Jewish person can't have blonde hair.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of them. To look sick. And if you look at the narratives that were made by the Nazis, how a Jew looked, slightly sick, greedy, dark hair. This feels a bit weird when you read it.
But did you get some anti-Semitic reactions?
Yes.
Yes. I assume.
Yes.
Yeah. What for example?
Why is he so blonde? How can he dare wearing a Nazi uniform? This is so German. Why is he so stupid? Why did you make a movie about him anyway? And I said, well, but he saved like 200 lives, but he didn't save it on his own. There were a lot of non-Jewish people in it. Why don't you have more screen time for the non-Jewish people? Sioma would not have survived if it had not been for Helene Jacobs. So how do you know this? I mean, prove it to me. Yes. And this massive amount of aggression. I think, listen, I mean, even let's think about that he survived because of his skills. What would be so worse about that? I mean, it's one person. I tell a story of one person. But he didn't.
Okay.
That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It looks as if a question of denial is coming in. On the one hand, nation has acknowledged they have committed a terrible crime during the war. On the other hand, from the reactions that you are telling us about, it is as if they want to believe that there were Germans who were helping the Jews, because otherwise they wouldn't have survived on their own, trying to whitewash themselves?
Absolute. I mean, there's a research that from the younger generation, they think like 30% of them think that their grandparents or grand-grandparents have not been Nazis or even been in the resistance. The truth is there has been less than 1% in the resistance, and most of them have been in the Partei. Because life was a lot easier when you have been in the Partei. Even if you did not strongly believe in them, it was easier to get an apartment, but easier to get like a place at university and so on and so on and so on. So, yes, but it's some... And then there is this thing, there is this really, really bad Nazi. Have you heard about the Wannsee Conference, movie? I think Sioma would not have liked this. Because there is like six really evil Nazis sitting there talking about the evilest things, and they get 2 hours screen time. You know, you'd sit there for 2 hours and you can say, wow, this is crazy, and we have to educate the young people. But what you educate them is they were like a bunch of crazy, crazy dudes who made it all. And this is not the truth. It's not the truth. There's like a whole country. So all these Jewish people disappear, all this Jewish, like the neighbor, there was an apartment, all of a sudden it's empty. And this is hard to...
Well, there were a bunch of bureaucrats who were just deciding how many people were to die and who was about to die. It was really horrible. If you look at the film, not only as if they are Nazis, but they are just ordinary people. Mm. I don't remember how many they were, 20, 25 or something like this, who were deciding the lives of. It came to 6 million people, but ultimately they were talking about 12. They were talking about exterminating also, all of the Jews in Europe. So this was really a horrible film. I saw the film, and I saw, you know, the British edition of the film that came, I don't remember, 15 years earlier, perhaps. And they were both horrible, really, because they were just ordinary bureaucrats who were just talking about other people as if there was something you could just kill.
Mm. This is true. But I think in these movies, I mean, Germany was in prime time. I think there's something dangerous about this movie. And when I was screening Passfälscher in Stuttgart, the Antisemitismusbeauftragte explained that we have the tendency to pull it all to the big, die großen Tiere, we call it the big animals, and leave the normal people behind. And Sioma said, for example, when you got this deportation letter, there were, it was not the Gestapo in Berlin 1942, it was the Schutzpolizei. And after the war, the Schutzpolizei turned into the normal police, like the normal Berlin police. And they came to the door, say, hello, there's the police, la, 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 and even carried the luggage to the deportation station. And the deportation in 1942 was in the middle of Berlin, in Moabit, opposite a post office. So everyone could see, like, Jewish families going there with their suitcases and even carried the suitcases by the Schutzpolizei. So it was like in plain sight, in plain sight. It was part of daily life. And if I had more money for the movie, this would have been scenes I would have shown. That like in plain daylight, they're like Jewish coming from all the town and are brought there, and this is the beginning from the end. And of course, in 1942, not everyone knew it. Also, a lot of Jewish people didn't know it yet. But still, it's so crazy. And I think that's probably one of the reasons Sioma didn't want to have the big animals in his film. To show, for example, when he asks Frau Peters for a blanket because it's so cold, and she says, nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Absolutely.
So, and, well, yeah. So,
Yeah, I mean, did you have obviously want to tell the story of Sioma. We talked about it just before we started with the interview, which was about, you know, how much do you think people who actually doesn't know much about the period of the Holocaust or the Nazi Germany, or I mean, do you, it feels like sometimes that when you watch the movie that there are some things are not clear. Was there any purpose doing it, a reason why you didn't like play the whole out so clearly?
Well, one of the reasons was Sioma didn't like it, and one was actually a money issue.
Yeah.
If I had shown that he has been actually at Levetzostraße and had his deportation number and then was pulled out because of his Freistellung, because he was in the weapon industry, people would know a lot of things better. Also, Sioma said he didn't know what was happening in the East when he was 21 years old, and he would like his character to be as naive as he was. There were other people who knew it, and they were devastated when their parents were deported. A lot of people said, listen, why can't he be so nonchalant about it? But it was his point of view in this time. The crazy thing is, this film was shown in Berlin Film Festival 18 months ago now. I think it's less 15. And I've shown it to a lot of students. And it's amazing how young people approach this film not knowing much about the Holocaust, because they're used to, actually because they're gaming a lot, they're used to every sign and every symbol. It's crazy. Don't tell the gaming doesn't make smart. They can see everything. They knew that there was, Giller has the star on the jacket, or she must be Jewish. When he opens his passport, you can see his face. On the other side, there's a big Jew, so he must be Jewish. That says this in this moment, and there's this sign in this scene. And I was like, wow, you see all of that? Then I showed, for example, to my parents, and my father is really smart. I mean, he's a psychologist, but he's 81 years old. He was asking me, was she Jewish? Was she Jewish?
Yeah.
And for him, like reading this really signs and being so quick and la 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 was too much.
Yeah.
Honestly.
It's like about the small details that you have to catch at the moment. Otherwise.
And I had like students from eighth grade.
Yeah.
Like 14 years old, they understood everything. And they were asking questions and things. And they said, I heard that they were not allowed to have animals, house animals, like a cat or something. And I was telling them that I was thinking about Sioma's grandmother having a bird and then it dies. I said, oh, this would have been amazing because they... But my father would never understood it. Never. And they can read like this, oh, he's George, he's this, he's this, he's doing this, he's this, and she said this word. And they, I mean, actually, their ears are still really good working. Yeah. So, and my actors are a bit mumbling, you know, young actors mumble a little bit. So for my parents, they did not understand everything. They're 81 years old. They like the music. Well, I'm sorry. But on the other hand, the younger generation likes it a lot, and I'm happy because... They can verbinden, was heißt das? They can relate to
relate
Sioma.
And connect.
They connect so much with Sioma. Yeah. And I mean, for Sioma, he went to all these schools, and Sioma, like me, he loved teenagers. Teenagers are these wild animals, and I love teenagers and actors, and Sioma was the same, and I think it's the next generation, and maybe if they grow up with this film in Germany. And feel how it is when you have a friend and then he's gone in the next moment. Maybe they understand how it feels when anti-Semitism kicks in.
But you did this movie in order to tell his story. Did you have previously, before in your earlier years, doing shooting movies or writing script and stuff like that, concentrating on the Jewish issue? Or is just because of this book? Do you have something before?
No. I was asked a lot. I mean, Napola was really successful, and I was asking a lot to write, like, Jewish woman who has, in order to survive, has an affair with an Nazi officer, la, 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 la. And for me, it was always the same stories I've heard so many times before. Yeah. And, for example, I loved The Pianist. It's one of my favorite movies. I think it's outstanding.
Yeah.
I think if you... go in this field of the Nazis, you have to say, okay, this is something I want to make a story about. Mm. Not I want to make an Oscar, I want to make la 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 la. Because then it's starting to be abusive. And I didn't want to be abusive. And when I read Sioma's story, I could relate to the story so much, to his cheerfulness, to him being Jewish and not very religious, because there have been a lot of Jewish Berliner, viele jüdische yes. Berliner, who have not been religious. Mm. And I mean, there's hardly ever a movie about it. Mm. I mean, a Jewish person has to be religious. Why? I mean, if you go to Israel, I mean, who's on the street in Israel now?
I mean, the religious are like minority, actually. They maybe might be majority soon, but
yeah.
So it's true, yeah. It's not everybody's.
So, I mean, I've been offered a lot of stories, but I could really relate to this one.
Yeah, actually, I'm happy to hear it from you, because I think it was so true and sincere what you did. Because really, when you explained yourself now, explained your motive behind it, then I can actually see it in the movie. I loved it. I went with a lot of expression, I really get touched by the movie, by this person. But it's true. I mean, you did actually succeed bringing him and his story without any manipulation or, you know, just put some music and make it more like sensible or whatever. You really did it as it is, this silence in the movie.
Yeah.
It's really good. I think it's really good.
I mean, me as a director, I learned a lot about it. I think leaving out a very important scene in the first 10 minutes, I think I demanded a bit too much from my audience. Mm. But there are also things that I love so much about the way Lewis Hoffman performs character. Because he was asked, why are you smiling all the time? Mm. But I think he's crying most of the time and hiding it behind smiling.
Mm. Yeah.
Which I think is a great achievement. And I see this among a lot of older Jewish people who actually have been through a lot, that they smile a lot because they want to make the other people, the other person, not being ashamed, especially in Germany. Mm. Yeah, so it's a lot of smiling and saying, hey, okay, I'm a Jew, but you can talk about me about the weather, you know? Like when the movie came out, there was this really, really incredible Jewish woman. She is like head of all the Jewish students in Germany, and said she is so happy when people find out that she is Jewish. She's actually really blonde hair, that they don't talk about Israel nonstop all the time. Mm. I mean, imagine I, being German, go to another country and they start talking about World War II the moment I said I'm German. And she's so happy talking about the weather or being asked, what is your subject? Yeah. You know, what are you studying?
Yeah, exactly. What do you like to do in your free time?
Yeah, like this, like being treated like someone. And this is a problem that the Nazis made. They made aus einer Religion, haben sie eine Rasse gemacht.
Okay, I need it in English.
Yeah, they transformed the religion into a race.
Okay.
You know, I mean, there's not such thing as a race. I mean, this is like racists believe in race. But there is not such a thing. Mm. But it's still in there. Mm-hmm. And they spent so much money, even when the war was lost, they spent 1 million Reichsmark on anti-Semitische propaganda. Wow. So all over the town, there has been these really, really ugly posters. And I could not put them in my movie because Sioma was gone and left Germany when they came out. But imagine you lose a war, you know you're not going to win this war.
Yeah.
You're still, the killing machine is like...
Yeah. Going on.
This is so horrible. I mean, they lost the war. It was lost, and they were like killing people like mad. And they were like putting papers, anti-Semitische, all over. They were completely brainwashed. The German people, they lost two world wars and were completely brainwashed. And this is something Sioma couldn't believe. He said, but when the war was lost, why didn't they just give in?
Yeah. Besides doing the
movie... Well, you were not supposed to admit that the war was being lost. Anybody who was trying to make such remarks was court-martialed.
That's true, in Germany.
Mm. So this was one of the reasons. I mean, everybody was pretending that everything is okay.
I mean, the last scene of our film, I'm not telling too much for people who watch it, Frau Peter says, this war is not lost. This war is not lost. Mm-hmm. And this is so crazy because it was. I mean, when the movie ends, it's January, February 1943 is when Germany lost Stalingrad. Mm. And they knew it. Yes. They just knew it. Even it wasn't on the radio because they had all boys in there writing letters home. So everyone knew it.
Unfortunately, there are still today people who believe that it's continuing. but I want to understand one thing. Beside the fact that you actually made this movie because you was impressed by the book and you want to do it, do you feel that after you did it, do you feel that now you have some kind of a mission? Do you want to continue working with this kind of subject? Do you feel that the movie was beyond telling Siomas' story? It's also some kind of a message, some kind of a fight against anti-Semitism, some kind of... I mean, are you feeling that you're doing some active... You're having some active role here in fighting anti-Semitism?
Well, I mean, for Sioma, yes. I can answer.
Okay, that was clear.
Yes. Okay. And anti-Semitism and racism, because it's on the same page. Yeah. Yes. And repression.
Yeah.
Repression, Rassismus, Antisemitismus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it really always depends on the story, but I mean, I was on the phone so much with Sioma and he cried so many times and he always said, why do people these kind of things, even when there were like other things on the news and repression, it's getting bigger.
Yeah.
It's getting bigger. We're in a world where repression is getting more and more and more. And I don't know why this is.
Yeah. The world is getting crazy.
It is not... I mean, there is this thing about... people thinking that repression is a way of stabilizing, but it's actually the absolute opposite. You know, it's the opposite of stabilizing. I mean, Germany was down. There was not one stone over another. So if this was a good way of stabilizing a society, then it would have worked, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't. It is actually the complete opposite.
Yeah.
And do you know what is the opposite of repression? Gleichberechtigung. Gleichberechtigung means every person has the same right.
Yeah.
Gleichberechtigung. I thought, I looked it up in the dictionary, I thought the opposite from repression is freedom. But freedom is actually a result from treating every person the same.
Yeah, equally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it will be. It has to be. It
has to be. Yeah, I know. I cannot promise that it will be, but it has to be.
It has to be.
There's no other way, actually.
It has to be. Yeah. You know what I liked about Sioma the most? When we were talking about repression and World War II, said, now, Maggie, we stop talking about them. We stop giving them all our lifetime. We talk about something nice now. And we talked often about how would be a world everyone would be treated equally. This was like something Sioma loved to talk about.
Yeah.
And... it has to be like this.
If you talk about the other thing, it's like as if you give it power, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to stop. Just think positive. Think about the thing that that's how it's supposed to be. That's how we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
And that's why, in the way, the evil doesn't have any power anymore.
It is a bit deader way of living.
Yes,
do you know Star Wars?
Yes, of course.
See, I loved Star Wars. and we always talked about the Jedi's and about the power and the force of love. And and Sioma was a really loving person. He really was. The fact that he loved life didn't mean that he was stupid.
I can also...
Well, he survived, so he was not.
He was also really, really lucky, but he was really not stupid.
Yeah, not surprising me. I mean, just the fact, the way he gave her the rations for food, even though she doesn't want to sleep with him. I mean, he just gave it to her, and in the end, obviously, she... She gave up. That's, I mean, it was like, wow, what a gentleman.
But Sioma was so... like this. He was never pressing.
Yeah.
It was really one of the things. He was never pressing, pushing, or repressing. And do you know the main character who's on the boat with the tiger in Life of Pi? Life of Pi, there's this little Indian boy who actually wants to be part of all the religion. The movie starts that he wants to have. And he's so good, but he wants to be everything, Christian and everything. And for me, he, this boy and the boy with the tiger and Sioma, they're kind of the same way you can approach life.
Yeah.
I mean, you can survive on a boat with a tiger.
Yeah. You actually can. He obviously showed us that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was also very unique in this character. That's true.
I tell me, how about film in Germany? This Jewish issue, is it becoming more important, or is it just going to be forgotten simply?
Well, I think the problem is, I mean, after the war stopped in 1945, there were 10 years of denial, which were ended with the Frankfurter Prozesse in the mid-50s. And then I think we did a lot to show young people what happened. But there is this, oh man, we've heard about this so many times now. Let's not talk about it anymore. Let's not go to a concentration camp. Let's just go to... So that even school classes say, I don't want to go to the concentration camp. And I think... Well, it's maybe 4 hours of your life to go there. In Munich, there's Dachau, which is really like a 35 minutes drive. Nice. And they're like a group of teenagers signing lists. They don't want to go there. And I think this is not a nice tendency. Mm. There's this, we've seen enough, we heard enough, we talked about it enough. Now we have to be proud to be Germans. I mean, you can, Sioma was proud to be German. I mean, he would not wear a uniform in my movie if he had not been. Right. So you can be like really proud and happy to be German, but still spend 4 hours on a concentration camp. I mean, where's the problem? And there's this tendency to be either completely woke or not. And there's this crazy tendency that the word woke becomes something that you don't want to be. You don't want to be woke. I think what's the problem about being woke? I love to be woke. It means that you are alert, that you try to check when do I have a racist thought, because we all have sometimes, and look back and think, where does this thought come from? Where's the root from what I've been thinking? What narrate? And there is this tendency to, we've done enough. Which I think is very dangerous.
I experienced, I've known some people in Germany, and I experienced many times this bad conscience. And you know, when I think many times you feel as if people are acting in a certain way just because they want to be free of this burden of the history, of this ugly horror history. So there is some psychology that playing in here, that is, some people are motivated in order to release yourself from this bad conscience, from this pain of knowing that your people did what they did. And so some of them, they just keep doing it in order to confirm that it was right to do. Mm-hmm. And some are just overwhelming, loving the Jewish or the Israelian, or... I experienced them both, actually. And it's actually very interesting to see how human cope with such a thing. It's a huge, huge thing to live with for generation, what happened in the Holocaust. Do you have any remark towards this? I mean, for a German living in Germany, in Berlin, and doing the actually now... working with this subject?
I think the problem is we will have to become aware of what we did without overdoing it. You know, the awareness has to be settled in the heart, and we have to start treating Jewish people like non-Jewish people. And then we are not racist anymore. You know what I mean?
Of course I do.
So in the moment you... And this, I think, is what a lot of black people just want from us white people to not make a difference. Mm. Then the world would be a better place. I think if they say, you're Jewish.
Yeah.
Ah, la, la, la.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's just even the same as, Israel, yeah. They're fascists. And I think, you're talking about fascism? Like yeah. All the Israelis, you put them in like one sack and you hit on it. And for like more than 10 minutes, like knock, knock, knock. And in German, you know, when Hitler came, there were this German love beer and they love talking over beer.
Yes.
So, but when you have like your third or your fourth beer, like sipping and you're drunk, it becomes very indistinctive. How can you say it? It's like, and when people start talking about Israel in this way, I get really angry. Yeah. Like, listen, this is not like a Stammtisch talk where you're like, about Israel.
Yeah.
And I think the world would be a lot better place if, like, you say you're Jewish and it's...
You know, there is some, I don't remember what's this director, the man who did the movie, The Believer. Have you seen it?
The Believer, no.
Wow, you have to see it.
Okay.
You really have to see it. It's actually, it's happening in the States.
Okay.
And the first scene you see, I will not tell about so much about the movie, but the first scene you see a Nazi, you know, he doesn't have any hair. You have these t-shirts with a Nazi cross and you are in a train or in a bus. I think it was a train. And then some little Jewish boy, typical American Jewish boys and like nerd. With glasses, he's just trying to read a book and he's completely burned down and doesn't want to look around and this Nazi just stand beside him and the train was completely packed and he's just sparking his leg and sparking it and he keep going like this and going like this in one point he just gave up. So I think, I don't know if it was his place to go down or he just chose just to get out. The Nazi went after him and he beat the shit out of him.
What?
Beat the shit out of him. This movie, that's how it starts. And it's really crazy. You have to see it, actually. It's if I keep telling, then the whole point of the movie will ruin.
Okay, I watch it. Mm-hmm.
The Believer.
The Believer.
So, The Believer.
Okay, I watch it.
This is something very, very strong. This person who did this movie, I don't remember his name. He's a genius.
Wow.
It's a bit intellectual. Yes.
I watch it.
You do.
I do.
It's still going on.
I do.
So that's the point why I was asking about it. Because, you know, sometimes saying I'm a Jew, I'm an Israeli, and it's really, really, I'm tired of it, how people actually right away define you, judge you. Nobody asks, my name is Yael. I mean... And you know what? I actually love to take pictures. Beyond that I'm a Jew, I'm an Israeli that live in a country.
I'm a photographer.
This is crazy, actually. And I think the Jewish people or the Israeli people are not the only one who suffered from that. I mean, each country that have suffered some horrible thing that's known all over, I believe they like doomed to be this... You know, people judge them right away. So, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, the moment you pack boxes and you put people in boxes, even if you do it in a really nice way, it's still racism.
Yeah.
You know, if you...
There are still lots of stereotypes about about Jewish people, and it's almost from anybody. I mean, from somebody who never met a Jew, but always there is a kind of stereotype, you know, hanging behind. That Jews are this, that, and then so on and so on. But maybe, you know, the fact that everybody is reacting when you're telling the people that you are Jewish, I mean, everybody's thinking about the Holocaust. Holocaust is still a very a thing that is it's a very defining sort of feature of a Jew, whether it's positive, it's negative, whatever. I mean, we are still discussing Holocaust, which maybe now is more... concentrated on the Holocaust denial, for example, that the Jews are trying to fight. But still, I have another question because we are running out of time. Okay. And what I noticed lately, and this I noticed, you know, just a couple of days ago, because I was watching the ceremony of a commemoration of Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, where there was even Israeli President Isaac Herzog who was having a speech, and he never mentioned the word Germany. He was talking about Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about Nazis, not the Germans. And this is a kind of German people are being exonerated of the crimes. They were not the Germans, they were the Nazis.
Yeah, but this is
who
crazy.
Did this.
Mm. This is actually
this is crazy.
Crazy,
isn't it?
This is actually yeah. crazy. Because have you seen the movie The Accused with Judy Foster?
I don't think so.
She gets raped, and then the two people who raped her get punished. And then, they get off. And then the whole movie is about that if you watch someone getting raped and not doing anything, you're equally guilty. This is the whole movie about. It's in a shot in the 90s.
Mm.
And if you watch the whole thing, like in Berlin, in plain sight, you're equally guilty.
Mm.
And the Germans hate it.
I agree.
They hate it. But this is the problem where I think a movie like Wannsee Conference is a bit dangerous. I mean, it's a well done, it's a wonderful movie. But there is not such thing that the Nazis and Germany. This is nonsense. A lot of Germans strongly believed in Adolf Hitler. He was a super superstar. And everyone said Heil Hitler. This is something I had to promise your mother. No one says Grüß Gott.
Yeah.
In a lot of German films, they say Grüß Gott. No, it's not true. It's but just washing. It's what they call whitewashing. It's crazy.
But maybe his point was like to just try to put it behind, just in a way to just let's just leave the German people behind it and let's just finish it and put the blame one place so we can get on with our lives, you know.
But actually,
maybe,
the truth is the German left it behind the moment the war was lost.
Yeah.
There was 10 years, 10 years from 1945 to 1955.
Yeah.
People did not know the word Auschwitz.
They, and
those who were working in the big concentration camps were like working in a bakery and la and had great friends. La 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 la.
Yeah.
And then came the Frankfurter Prozesse. Run by a man, Jewish and homosexual, who really was fighting for his life, to not getting killed on the open street. And then awareness kicked in. And then the student revolution from 68 were like pushing it further. Yeah. And then awareness started to happen. But the awareness took place after 10 years of denial. And these 10 years of denial, they're still there.
They're still there.
Yes.
I know. But you know what, before we end, I just need to ask you to ask you the last question. Do you are you have any plan to do another movie in this kind of topic movie to talk more about the Holocaust? In your own way, in this beautiful way you do it.
I'm quite sure I do it. And maybe, you know what, maybe when I'm older, maybe I make a series about Sioma's life, because if you could see like all these people and getting deported in plain sight at the beginning, but like police officers were carrying their suitcases. There is a bit pervert. It's you can really see there is not such a thing than the German people and the Nazis. The German people were, the Nazis were like Germans in uniforms.
Yeah.
Yes. You know?
So you're gonna give us some more.
Yeah, I try.
Wow, Maggie, thank you very, very much.
Thank you for having me.
It was amazing to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And it was beautiful movie, guys, everybody who listened to us. If you have a chance, do see the movie. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here at the end, we've been listening to the soundtrack from the film The Forger that we have been discussing with our guest Maggie Perrin, the director of the film. The film hits Danish cinemas in May with the Danish title Pas for Falskorn. Your hosts in the studio were Jael Fahy Gravesen and Alexander Milchtach-Slo. Thank you for being with us on Radio Shalom.